Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 2nd, 2018, and we are reading from the Big Book on page 90, the fourth paragraph, if he does not want, through two paragraphs ending in the way of a solution and commenting on both paragraphs. Today's readers are 12 Steps, Shauna O, 12 Traditions, Julie E.B., and readers of the text, Wendy M. and Jordan L. The reference numbers for Thursday, August the 2nd, the 10 a.m. meeting, 11738, and Friday, August the 3rd, the 7 a.m. meeting, 11740. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Shauna O. to read the 12 steps. Press star 1, Shauna.
Good morning. This is Shauna O., recovering compulsive eater in Washington. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna O. And Julie E.B. will read the 12 traditions.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in the state of Colorado. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeater Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communications. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks, I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 90, the fourth paragraph, If He Does Not Want, through two paragraphs ending in the way of a solution and commenting on both. And will Wendy M. please read for us?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you, Wendy.
So Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado, grateful to be on the line. Thanks for letting me be of service. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything, nor should they tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. You might place this book where he can see it in the interval. Here, no specific rule can be given. The family must decide these things, but urge them not to be over-anxious, for that might spoil matters. Usually, the family should not try to tell your story. When possible, avoid meeting a man through his family. Approach through a doctor or an institution is a better bet. If your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly unless he is violent. Let the doctor, if he will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. Okay, great. So, again, I'm Wendy M., recovered in Colorado, grateful to be on the line. Thank you, God, for entire abstinence. So what I'm seeing in general about this chapter and about sponsoring is that it's not just about sponsoring. I feel like the directions are also telling me how to be in a relationship with another human being. So it's modeling that, right? So first of all, it says, if he does not want to, well, you know, before program, it didn't matter what you wanted. It just mattered what I wanted, right? So if he does not want to, I'm like, that's irrelevant because it only, you know, it was only about what I wanted, right? Self-seeking, selfish, self-centered. And then it says, never force yourself upon him. Well, here's the deal. I spent most of my life forcing things. I'm one of the most impatient people I've ever met. And I forced my way all the time, right, through self-seeking. However I could get my way, I would force it, right? And I can be impatient, I can be pushy, I can be over-anxious, right? And I have no patience, so things need to happen now, right? So it's just something that I'm working on. But more to the point, when we talk about sponsoring, right, that this is not a convincing game, right? I'm not in the convincing business here. It's not my job. Like, let's say at a meeting, face-to-face meeting, where there's a newcomer, it's not my job, right, to make that person my sponsee. It's not my job at all to tell somebody or to rush newcomers, but to tell them, you know, you need to work with me or you need to work with someone and you need to do it now, right? It's not on my timeline. It's on theirs, right? And that's what this is saying. You know, I heard yesterday, timing is everything. So, you know, some people have to do more research, like, for example, myself. So I spent the first 15 years in OA, but I wasn't ready to do the deal. I was not ready to do the deal. I did a half measures for 15 years. And that's what it took. It took 15 years for me. It's not good or bad. It really doesn't even matter. Because, you know, 2 years ago, I was ready to be entirely abstinent and work through this book. You know, so you're ready when you're ready. And it's not my business to say when somebody is ready. And you might spoil matters if you go too quickly. And something I like to say is, if somebody's ready to do this deal, a toothpick could sponsor them, right? It doesn't matter. We're just reading a book to somebody. The deal is theirs. It's about them, not me, right? It has nothing to do with me. And the good news is if you're desperate the way I was 2 years ago, then you're ready, you know? And I had to be desperate because it says we're willing to go to any length. I'm going to do what you did because I want to get what you've got, right? So that's what I know today. But this is attraction, not promotion. This is not about me convincing anybody or urging them. Sometimes at a meeting, I'll like be so wanting to get that newcomer like under my wing immediately. I don't know what they need. I don't know how they're going to get to God. You know, that's up to them. That's up to their higher power. You know, as a friend of mine always says, some people need to take more bites. I needed to take 15 years of bites in OA, sponsoring people and going to 5 meetings a week. I wasn't ready to do the deal. I just wasn't. So God's in charge of this. Okay, God's in charge of this, not me. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Wendy M. Okay, the floor is now open to share on what was just read. Please say your name just once as it helps me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
This is Laura W.
Okay.
Jen A.
Jenny H.
Jordan L.
Julie E. B.
Okay, let me read you the list that I have in case I missed anybody. I have Laura W., Jan A., Jenny H., Jordan L., and Julie E. B.
Hi, it's Laura W. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead, Laura W., and then we'll be Jen A. after you.
Thanks, Melanie. Thanks, everybody. Good morning. It's Laura W., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Gosh, I've been listening to the recordings at night for the last week. I was away on vacation with my family, and what a great, you know, a great spot to be in, you know, working with others and talking about the family. And it's amazing to come home abstinent again after another vacation. And if he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. You know, I really try to live by that because I want to spread the message. I want to carry the message. I want to scream this from the rooftops that this works. However, I've known through experience and just people, you know, frothy emotional appeal of other people telling me, just do this. You know, I don't understand, Laura. If you're hungry, just eat. I don't get it, you know. It doesn't work. Hysterically pleading does not work. And somebody once said on this line that the word sponsor can stand for sober person offering newcomer steps of recovery. And all I can do is offer what I've experienced. This is it talks about the solution, and it's a solution. It's not just something that could happen. It's a solution to my problem. And but working with others, I have to be very careful, you know, only to share how I'm like them and share my experience. And this whole the whole 12th step is really about the message. It's not the messenger. It's about, you know, how do I stay recovered? Well, I carry this message just to show another person that my life is a miracle, and and that I have to find someone. It's not an option, really, whether or not I should find someone. It's in order to stay recovered, I need to continue to find people to work with. But when it talks about the family, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult. Only another alcoholic can help an alcoholic, in my experience. And, you know, and when somebody pushes and prods, and it for me, it didn't work. So I'm just grateful to be able to carry the message one day at a time. I'm grateful that I can be an example for my children, whether or not they're compulsive overeaters and they have this disease is not me to. It's not up to me to determine that. More will be revealed for them, but I can just carry the message to them and to others, and to show them that, you know, be an example of the big book. Thanks for letting me share. Pass.
Great. Thank you, Laura W. Jan A., it's your turn, followed by Jenny H.
Good morning. This is Jen A., recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic and bulimic in Colorado. And I just love it because in my life, I'm a salesperson, right? And I work in a sales office, and I'm selling apartments to people who are 62 or older, retirement living, right? So I have my agenda, and I'm going to make sure that I give them all the information, and I'm going to try and make the sale. That's my life. That's how I'm wired in this real world. When it comes to recovery, I have to, like, switch hats and switch gears, right? Because working with others doesn't mean I'm trying to sell them a solution. I'm not trying to sell them a new design for living, right? That's what we know we get in this program after working the steps. But I am there just to be of service, to listen, to be a listening ear to them, and to not try and sell the program of Overeaters Anonymous. So I have a coworker in my office. She's one of my best friends, and her daughter struggles with anorexia. And she's watched me in the last 2 years of this program going to being skin and bones to being healthy, maintaining a healthy body weight. And not only has she seen the physical transformation, she's seen the transformation of my life and my heart. And that's the biggest thing, is that I don't push my agenda on her and say, oh, well, this is how I recovered, and this is what I did, and these are the meetings I go to, and blah, 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 blah. No, that's not it at all. I just suit up and show up. And when there becomes an opportunity and God allows there to be an opening, guess what? I get to share a message of hope and of joy. And this is a mom. No mom wants to see their kid, right, have to be or an addict. In fact, I'm going through that right now myself, and it sucks. But I can't lead anybody to the water. I can't make anybody drink. All I can do is just show them who I am, and just by being just Jen, that's it, right? And from being just Jen, things will happen. That's how in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, I was talking about it with a girlfriend, like, my sponsor never raises his hand to say he's going to sponsor people. If you're truly willing and desperate, you'll walk up to that person and say, hey, I want what you have. And that person, if they're willing and they're able to sponsor you, they'll do the deal. So it doesn't matter if someone's not putting their number out there on the line. You call them anyway, because how do you know, right? How do I know there's not someone I can work with? So like it's been said, it's attraction rather than promotion. And I'm so glad that I learned this in the chapter working with others. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jen A. And Jenny H. that's next.
Hi, this is Jenny H., compulsive overeater, recovering in California. Yeah, this line is very alive for me right now. I had started sponsoring somebody, and it was like this constant battle of going back to step one and just her willingness and her powerlessness. And the way we met, she did approach me, and I was like just on step 12. So I was really eager to carry the message forward. And I took her to a meeting and we talked, and I mentioned to her, you know, if you want to do this, I can temporarily sponsor you. And then, you know, the relationship went from there, and I reflected later, like, you know, I never gave her the chance to ask me to be her sponsor. I kind of put it on her, and she wanted help, but she wasn't there yet. And she's still not there. And I wrestled so much with it, and it revealed a lot about me. My sponsor kept telling me, you know, whatever happens with this sponsorship, like, sponsoring is the number one place where I've learned the most and I've grown the most in my program. And I really learned about my codependence through working with her. And eventually we did need to part ways and had to have that conversation. And it was so hard for me. It like hit every trigger of how I want to save somebody. I'm doing my self-seeking and being a helper and knowing that my worthiness comes from my ability to help this person, and the fear that I have of hurting somebody's feelings and how to say something to somebody, like how to call somebody out in a way that's loving and compassionate. And oh my God, there's so much in it. And I just really appreciate this. I'm also working on this with my sister, and I just pulled over on the freeway and someone's coming to help me because they think I need help. So I'm going to go. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much, Jenny H. And Jordan L., it's your turn. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mel. Can you hear me?
I can. Good morning.
Good morning, you guys. My name is Jordan L. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado, where it is extremely smoky out this morning. but anyway, it's good to be live on the line. I haven't been able to tune in live all week. So I'm glad that I can be here this morning with you guys. And I just want to, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that got read earlier this week, too, because I thought it was important and no one mentioned it, right? So when I started sponsoring this time around, I was super stoked. I really thought that I had found something. I still think that I have, but I really thought that I had found something, and I wanted to share it with the whole friggin' world. And so I was, like, on the roof shouting great tidings and whatnot. And then I started seemingly failing with those first couple of sponsees. In that, you know, they weren't staying abstinent, or they weren't staying in the program, or this, or that, or blah, blah, blah. And Bill talks about that in his story, right? He talks about, like, not succeeding, with these sponsees, except that he stayed sober. Well, lo and behold, it's been almost 10 months now. It has been 10 months now, and I'm still abstinent. That's the longest ever in my life. So that's pretty amazing right there, right? And there was a line earlier this week that talks about how the sick man is very ill. and I say that not to like talk about the sick man, but that was extremely comforting for me when I first started doing this, because, you know, I'm human. And And it was good to know that, like, this isn't about me, yet it is, you know? Like, this isn't about whether or not I'm the best sponsor ever. It's just about me being abstinent. However, I'm equipped here. I'm specially equipped. And yes, I've been blessed with a lot of physical recovery and stuff like that. You guys can't see that, right? Like, you can't see that. All you can hear is my voice. And especially all you can hear over these lines is, like, the vulnerability in my voice. I'll wrap it up here. Of, like, I know where, I feel you. I know where you've been, you know? And I found a solution. So, anyway, that's all I got this morning. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jordan. That's Jordan L. We are reading on page 90, starting with paragraph 4, if he does not want to see you, and reading through two paragraphs today that will end on page 91, paragraph 1, in if in the way of a solution. And Julie E.B. is going to share next, and then the line will be opened up for additional folks to comment. Hi, Julie.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in the state of Colorado. And I'm really grateful to be here and sharing today. Wow, this one's hitting me. I hope that feedback's not from my line. This one's really hitting me hard because I'm going through this from a couple points of view. On the one hand, I'm gratefully recovered, but I'm also still in my living amends to my family, for whom I was the tornado, and I have a long road of reconstruction ahead. As I have people close to me that are in program, the temptation to plead with them not to go through the long struggle, 36 years that I went through, to be over anxious, and checking up on how their recovery is going is very challenging for me. But what does it say? What does it say for me as a family member or as a sponsor if I'm over anxious? What does that tell me? That tells me I'm in fear. What does that tell me? That God is not everything, that I'm still in charge. And if I have not quit playing God, then I'm of no use to anyone. So when I'm over anxious for how my sponsee is doing, how my family's doing, how anyone else in my life is doing, then I'm living in fear. And when I'm living in fear, I'm blocking the sunlight of the Spirit. We have a higher power that does a much better job than I did of taking care of my family members, of taking care of my sponsees. As I say to one of my kids, I'm part of the rock you have to drop, and that's a reference to an article, a book. I'm part of the rock you have to drop, so I don't know what's best for you. And it has to be true. My job is to stay out of the way. And it's so exciting to see people lean in and find their higher power, and even to admit to folks I'm sponsoring, hey, I'm not it. So if you're still suffering in this disease, I just really hope that you know that I've come back from the brink of death, of disease. I had 6 specialists. And I live today recovered and free, but the physical recovery is just the beginning. I don't have to be over anxious about everything because of a higher power that is taking care of it for me. Thanks for letting me share today. I'm going to pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. The lines are now open for folks to share on paragraph 3 on page 90 and paragraph 1 on page 91. Who would like to comment?
Shelby K. Kelly S.
Chevy K. Kelly. And Kelly S.
John K.
John K.
Elaine B.
Elaine B.
Sherry KB.
Sherry KB.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O. Let's go with that. I have Chevy K, Kelly S, John K, Elaine B, Sherry KB, and Kathleen O. Hi, Chevy.
Hi, good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, uh-huh.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Chevy K. I am a compulsive recovered overeater from New Jersey. It's very, very wonderful to be sharing on the line. I haven't been able to get on because of my kids' summer schedule, so I'm going to be fast before someone starts banging on the door. But what jumped out at me when reading these paragraphs and what came to mind is that I have to be so careful not to stand in judgment of my sponsees and to respect their process, their recovery process, just like I wanted my recovery process respected. And God has a different recovery process outlined for everyone. And I find myself sometimes wanting my sponsees to follow my script, to do things my way. I can get impatient and have certain expectations and judgments, like I said, and then I kind of forget what my process was. You know, what did I look like when I was first recovering and I was finding my own unique path? What did I go through? How was I exploring? How was I establishing a connection to God? So it's very easy for me, again, to have certain expectations, but then to remind myself I was there once too. And I had my own experience, and it's not fair of me, you know, to have certain expectations that aren't realistic. So again, just kind of keeping myself always in a place of humility, looking back and appreciating where I once was, and respecting everyone's own process and own path and own connection to God. So that's what I wanted to share, and I pass, and everyone have a beautiful weekend.
Thank you, Chevy K. Kelly S., it's your turn, followed by John K. Kelly S., press star 1.
I'm here. Sorry, my phone must have double muted. That was weird. Anyway, this is Kelly S., recovered in Oklahoma. I just really wanted to share a little bit. I got on a few minutes late, so I may be repeating somebody. But, you know, I think about, in the big book, it talks about frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And I know that's true for me. And so when it's talking about these paragraphs about family, you know, what I think about is my family. And it's so, you know, it's one thing to work it with our friends, coworkers, or sponsees, and not that that's not challenging, but my family, and especially my daughter. I have a daughter that I, of course, think she has this disease. And what I have to remember is all I can do is be an example of recovery to her. My kids, of course, I'm 55, so they've seen me in my struggles. They've seen it. And I think sometimes that I worry that they, you know, all of them, her especially, may have a closed mind to OA because I've been in this program for 30 freaking years, you guys, but I wasn't working it the way you're supposed to. So I'm sure my example has been like, oh yeah, here goes mom again. You know, I've got over three years now. So I think it's going to have to be a track record. They're going to have to see me working this program to want what I have. And what I think about though is that, you know, my mother has 40 something years of sobriety in AA and in Al-Anon. And I'm telling you guys, if my mom could have fixed me, she would have fixed me because, you know, she went to Al-Anon because she couldn't fix me. And she's done everything she could have ever done for me as I was growing up in this disease. And, you know, but it didn't work because, you know why? I wasn't ready. you can't say the wrong thing if somebody's ready. You can't say the right thing if they're not. And I know that for myself. You know, yeah, wish I would have got it sooner, but guess what? I have it now, and I'm so grateful. So I have to remember my daughter has her own path, and that's so hard. So, yes, I can be – all I can do for her is be an example and for other people in my life. And, you know, they have to come to me like somebody else said. If they want it, when they're ready, they're going to come to me and ask me. And I can't push it down her throat because when I say things to them, she's like, I know, Mom. I know, Mom. You know, she's 28. So, you know, it breaks my heart. It makes me sad. But what can I do today? Work this program and to continue to be an example and show her, too, that I'm a different person because who wants to be thin and crazy as hell? You know, and that's what they see. Here goes Mom again, right? So today I've been at a maintenance, regular body weight, neutrality with food. They're learning how I'm making amends. I'm being a different person, and my kids are saying things. So I hope at some point she'll want what I have in it. All right, and I'll wrap up with this. I have to remember she has a higher power, and I'm not it. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly S. John K., it's your turn, followed by Elaine B.
Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Thanks, Team Friday. You know, it's the hardest thing to do to be out in public and to know that there's a solution and to see, let's say, a 300, 400-pound person and not want to help. You know, I know there's a solution. I have a lightsaber I can throw. You know, why shouldn't I? Well, I can't. I can't because if I do, it's unsolicited, you know. And, you know, even suggesting a group called Overeaters Anonymous will probably get you some kind of response like, what, are you calling me fat? You know, and it's frustrating because I know I can see pain. I can see people walking around in pain. and I can't do that. And the other thing is I think somebody mentioned it earlier, if I do it when it's like was said about timing before also, I could muddy the waters and I could besmirch the name of OA to somebody who maybe later when they were ready, if they didn't get those waters muddied, might get it. You know, there's a story out here in Los Angeles of a very famous television star who had a bad drinking problem. Both of his producers and the meetings with are in program and really strong-armed him to go to AA, and it backfired. It backfired terribly, and he went on TV and ranted about AA and calling it a cult and all. And first of all, that was bad in general, but that may end up killing him someday because he won't be able to hear the message because he'll have such a negative feeling. And I have a great little thing that I can do sometimes if I'm presented the possibility and I'm with somebody, maybe in a work situation who's really heavy and seems to have a problem. I'll just find a way to mention, gee, well, you should have seen me when I was 100 pounds more than I am now. And because I know when I was 100 pounds more, if I heard somebody had lost 100 pounds, I wanted to know how they did it. But the thing is, I'm just casting the lure out into the water, and if the fish bites, the fish bites. When I came to my first program, AA, we actually had 12-step training, and because we went out on 12-step calls to people's houses. And the thing I was taught was two important things. Number one, tell your story. Number two, shut up. Stop. Let them talk. It's attraction, not promotion, you know. And the other thing is if I push too hard, I'm implicitly saying they're doing something wrong now, you know. And so I have to keep a very light hand when I talk in OA meetings about Vision for You because I want to tell people how much I love it. But I also want to be careful because sometimes if I'm telling somebody, oh, you should go to Vision for You, you're implicitly saying what they're doing right now is wrong. And that's not for me to say. Okay, and I'll wrap up. I don't know what's going to turn the key in the lock for somebody, and it's not my job to drag people in. It's my job to take care of myself, be the power of example, to show what God can do. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, John K. Elaine B., it's your turn, followed by Sherry KB.
Thank you so much for your service. You know, what a privilege it is to carry this message. What an honor it is to have a message to carry. What an amazing miracle has happened to every single person on the line who is able to go out there who knows what this experience is like, who has experienced the miraculous. And like someone else had said on the line, I learn more by sponsoring others than any other way that I learn. And I have never had a sponsee or known someone who was just ready to start go out there and sponsoring people who ever felt that they were ready. But, you know, the eagerness of what we have found has caused me to press in a little too fast, a little too hard, and cause people who maybe I could have helped if I was a little more gentle to just be, you know, just not force myself upon them. And so there's a saying that my husband shared with me. He's in another program. He's a clutterer. And it's okay if I say that with him to reveal his anonymity. He wanted me to understand because I didn't. You know, just like people who don't understand, why can't you eat just one brownie? I don't understand. He said, if you take a piece of paper off the desk of a clutterer and you move it 2 feet and put it down again, that is like taking a bone out of a rabid dog's mouth. I have to remember these people are sick because when I was in my relapse, that's what it was like. You touch my food and you're in trouble, you know. So I have to remember that these people are really, really sick. I know they're sick. That's why I want to bring the solution, but they may not be ready. And my hope, my aspiration is by carrying a message of what the steps have done for me, what God has done for me, that it is possible to live abstinently happy, to not be driven by the food, to not be obsessed, but also to identify the other isms that led me to the food over and over that are so common among us. And some of the you know, side effects like, you know, not fitting in an airplane seat or what, being more concerned with the food on the table than the people at the table. And just to be able to share those things and help people identify in may be enough to keep them coming back, whether they come back to me or not. And that's ultimately my goal, is just be carrying the message and hoping that they'll respond and that I pass.
Thank you, Elaine B. Sherry KB, it's your turn, followed by Kathleen O.
Good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered, compulsive reader. And thank you so much for your service, Lynn, and everybody on the line, and welcome newcomers. You know, the thing that jumped out at me, too, is you might place this book where he can see it in the interval. Well, my thought is, you know, I got Vision for You cards together. I put my name on the back of it and my phone number. And when I meet people who talk to me about it or ask me questions, I just hand them the card and say, hey, check this meeting out. Give me a call if you want to talk about it. That's a lot of times how I handle it. And I carry them in my purse and a lot of places in my car, whatever, because I know that I know that when I got on this line, it really, really struck home with me, and it carried depth and weight for me. And the whole idea is that what people have said, you know, it is based on attraction rather than promotion. It is letting someone, they have their own journey, and especially if I try to play God by telling them what to do or what not, you know, I'm just running the fairy show with them. And, you know, I have been on the end, the receiving end of having various sponsors that really tried to shove things down my throat to, you know, doing nothing. And so I've learned a lot through the years of how I do work with people. And, you know, I like somebody said, I learned so much about myself sponsoring. Also, just growing up, you know, I was put on a diet at 9 years old, and everybody had a part in my family, and everybody's part with me was, what's, you know, if Sherry just lost weight, everything would be great, and everybody was focused on Sherry's weight. And so, you know, I had so much frothy emotional appeal done to me that it turned me off for years. And so I know it's just, if, you know, if I leave somebody alone and I just kind of give them, plant a seed, you know, it's going to come in their time. And, you know, it takes what it takes. And that's what I've learned even for myself. Doing this work and still being recovered, I'm still unpacking things about myself. And I think I will continue to do this. And for the rest of my life, one day at a time. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. And Kathleen O, it's your turn.
Good morning. I think we're on Lynn now, right? Good morning,
yeah.
Lynn, who morphs back and forth to Melanie there. This is Kathleen O, recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. And thanks for all the great shares, everyone who's shared on the line this morning, and all of you who are quietly listening out there. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. And I'll tell you, we addicts, and I'm going to put all of us in that category because I haven't met one that's not like this. We do not like to be told what to do, and so it doesn't work for, you know, it's telling us it's also telling the family not to hysterically plead, because unless we're ready, we're not going to do this. And I remember when I was younger, my father, you know, would gently say sometimes to me, "Are you sure you need to eat all that?" And all it would do would annoy the heck out of me. And then I just learned to, you know, eat in private. I would just hide when I ate so I wouldn't get those kind of comments. And truly, it's like, you know, people want to help you. You're in pain, but you really do have to be ready. And the great thing about sponsoring is, you know, it starts off by telling us nothing will ensure immunity as intensive work with others. And I, in my face-to-face meetings, I would just kind of really zone in on the newcomers and kind of just, like, you know, watch them. There was one meeting where, and it doesn't work to, like, you know, pounce on them, and sometimes they get overwhelmed when people do that. But there was this one gal that came in new, and she started to leave. And I don't know if it was the break or the end of the meeting. I think it was maybe the end of the meeting. And and people had stood up and said that they would sponsor. And she just sort of walked out. And I felt like she was, you know, on the shy side. And sometimes I think it's hard for people to ask for help. I mean, if they show up, they definitely want it. They probably need it. Now, whether they're going to do it and they're ready is another thing. But you know, that's not for me to judge. So anyway, I went up to her as she was heading out the door, and I said, you know, you really need to, you know, get a sponsor. And so I brought her up to this woman, and I introduced them. That's all I did. I just introduced them. And thankfully, it doesn't work all the time, and I try to be very cautious when I'm doing it. But the two of them clicked, and this woman lost her weight, and she's still in program today, and that must have been like 8 years ago. So you know, it really, I more than anything, you know, once we get this, we really want other people to get it. We want it so badly for them. And that is so different from when I was younger and my friends would go on a diet and I like couldn't wait for them to go off the diet. You know, I didn't want them to be thin. I want people to get this because it's so wonderful. So, you know, this, we do have a solution, and it's the only solution that's ever worked for me after decades of trying dozens of so-called solutions out there. This really does work, and it is an absolute joy and pleasure to be able to pass it on to people. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen O. We have time for one more three-minute share. Who would like that time?
Lisa J.R.
Okay, Lisa, please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much. Wow, what an awesome meeting. I will say that, you know, I was thrilled when I finally took a hold of that ring, that life ring, and I was able to float because I was going under. I was dying. And, you know, for my sponsees, yes, I have a kinder, gentler way, but with my family, unfortunately, I have a couple family members that are dear to me. I don't want them to drown. So what did I do? I swam over, and when they didn't take hold of the life raft, I shoved it down over their heads. And yeah, I went as far as to do a study with my husband, a big book study. And you know, it was not well received with my family. However, words are like toothpaste, and thankfully, you know, my husband's in recovery now, and I'm so grateful for that. But yeah, I need to start treating my loved ones like I treat my sponsees, and so grateful for what was shared today. With that, I will pass.
great. Thank you very much, Lisa J.R., and thank you to everyone who shared and to Team Friday, Shauna O., Julie E.B., Wendy M., Jordan L., and thank you to Melanie, and thank you for everybody on the line for your patience as my technical difficulties took over. Anyway, we will now close the meeting with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Jordan L. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning again. This is the last chapter of the Big Book, A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God constantly discloses more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer is if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.